Welcome to Tangible Changemakers Podcast with your host, Lois Duncan and Will Bombardier, with a little talk and a lot of action.
Hi, and welcome back to another episode of Tangible Changemakers Podcast. We are super excited to have a very special guest with us today, Scoot Blackson. And we recently drove from Florida back to Minnesota. It's about a 27-hour drive. And we had the pleasure of listening to his latest book, The Magic of Surrender, on our drive. And it was really a great drive, a travel companion. We stopped a lot and had lots of conversations. We loved the stories that you share about your life and how you got to where you are. And it was so funny because we're so in alignment on what we believe. Like, you use the same words, the same verbiage, the same language of everything that we've been trying to put out there. So it's so refreshing to see somebody that's actually out there sharing just amazing inspiration to encourage people, to let them know that there is a possibility to create a life that is amazing. Like, we don't have to live in suffering, and we can make peace with the suffering. You know, and so it's really beautiful. So I'm excited to get this conversation going. And first, just for our audience, in case you're not familiar with Coot, Coot Blackson is a transformational teacher, speaker, visionary guide, and national bestselling author of You Are the One and The Magic of Surrender. And his mission is simple: to awaken and inspire people across the planet to access inner freedom, live authentically, and fulfill their true life's purpose. So that's a big mission, and it seems like you're doing really well with that. You've been up to big things. So I guess what I'd like to start is just ask you a little bit about what inspired you to write The Magic of Surrender, and how did you come to understand the power of surrender in your own life? What does that mean? What does surrender mean to you? How do you define that? Share a little bit about the background.
The background of The Magic of Surrender specifically was, let's just say, this was not the book I wanted to write. This was not the book I planned to write. This was not the book I, Coot, the person, personality, thought I was going to write. To be honest, I wanted to write a completely different book. And I sat down one day after my first book was a bestseller, and I thought, okay, now I'm going to write a mega bestseller. And I sat down, And I began to create an entire strategy for the book I thought people would want, the book I thought that my publishers would want to buy, the book I thought my audience wanted. And I came up with maybe 70 amazing ideas and brilliant ideas. And the truth is, none of those felt authentic. None of those felt aligned. They just felt like things to do for marketing and things that were great, but none of those felt truly in alignment with my soul. And if I was honest, as honest I can be, it just wasn't true. I could have lied to myself. And so when I looked at this whiteboard I created, the only word that felt true, that felt vibrationally like charge, that lit me up but scared me at the same time, was the word surrender. And I thought, oh shoot, you know, like, that's the book, like, yeah, that's it. And yet everything inside of me was like, no, we don't want to write about that because there's just so many misconceptions about surrender. Uh-huh. And we know we should do it, but we resist it, and well, people want to read about it. And so I had to go through a process of surrendering to the book about surrender, and the book that was seeking to be written, not just the book I thought I should write. And when I surrendered, everything started flowing. Everything began to unfold in really beautiful ways. It wasn't necessarily always easy, but it was beautiful. And so I think, look, when we look at surrender, just to set a context for the conversation, I think in our culture today, we have this misconception that surrender is weak, that surrender is passive, that surrender is giving up, that surrender is, you know, waving the white flag, that if you surrender, you're going to be a doormat. If you surrender, you're going to be a victim. You're going to be taken advantage of. You're going to be left behind, that you won't manifest your goals, dreams, and desires, and you won't get what you thought you wanted. And so when we have this, let's say, limited negative idea of surrender, who the hell wants to do that? It's not very inviting. And so I really wanted to give people a inspiring new understanding of surrender, because I believe that surrender is the most powerful thing that we can do, that surrender is the real secret to manifestation, that surrender is the real key to the next level of our lives, that in true surrender, if we really surrender and really practice this principle of life, that, like, what if you didn't get less, but what if you actually got more than you could have intended and planned and projected and strategized and manifested with one's own human limited egoic, you know, power and perception? And, like, what if it was maybe not what you wanted, maybe not what you thought, but what if it was better? What if it was beyond, you know, more magic? That's where the magic is. Magic is that which is beyond what we can even conceive for ourselves. Yeah. And we all want the magic, but we don't want to surrender. We want to hold on to who we were. We want to hold on to what was. And so to me, the next level of one's life requires the next level of you. The next level of you requires that you let go of what's no longer a vibrational match. But what we often do as human beings, out of safety, comfort, familiarity, self-preservation, survival, is we hold on. We hold on to what's not working. And that simply blocks our blessing. And so surrender, just to set that context a bit more, is a letting go of control, or I should say the illusion that we are in control even in the first place, control being the master addiction. Surrender is a letting go of trying to force and manipulate life to fit our limited idea of how we think it should be, and is a willingness to take the limitations off of life so that we can let go of who we think we should be, how we think life should be, so that we can be just available and open to the magic and the mystery and allowing life to lead us in ways that we can't even imagine. And so if you look at the truly, and I mentioned some of these people in the book, the folks that have inspired me, Jesus, Buddha, Gandhi, Mother Teresa, Martin Luther King, Mandela, Bruce Lee, Muhammad Ali, folks that weren't passive or weak, they were very inspiring people that, you know, even though most of them are gone, they're still, their example and the possibility that they lived is still impacting people today. All of these people at some point, they got to the point of their life. I would say they got they reached the limitation of their ego's capacity to manifest. And at a certain point, all of them, whether they knew it or not, they had to surrender themselves to life, to the divine, to God, to the universe, to the infinite, to their soul, to the deeper expression of what we're seeking to express through them. And in that surrender, they transcended their human limitations. And I think they tapped into another dimension of life. And that's when life began to use them and express through them and manifest through them. And that's when the magic happens. Life begins to, in surrender, we open ourselves to life, and life begins to manifest through us. And I think that's the magic. And so I just say, if you want more magic, you have to surrender. There is no magic without surrender. And the degree of magic we want to experience in life is really determined by the degree of surrender. And surrender really is the password to freedom.
Oh, I would agree. Beautiful. So can you share some specific examples from your own life, like when surrender led to a positive outcome for you? Like, and then how our listeners can apply that to their own lives. Maybe something that you've been through, that, like, how did you come to the concept of surrender?
Well, let me just share kind of what inspired the book, because that's what triggered the book. And then I'll share many examples from my life. So in 2016, I was on a book tour promoting my first book, You Are the One. And I was on a high. I was interviewed by Larry King, who was a childhood icon of mine. And then the next day, I get a phone call. My mother has stomach cancer. And so the dichotomy, the duality, the paradox of life, and life has a way of humbling you in a very strange way, you know? And so my mother was the person I loved the most. She was the closest person to me. I loved her with all of my heart. So much of who I am is because of her love and her just who she was. And so I was devastated. And I was living in Los Angeles. She lives in London. I basically said, I'm going to heal my mother and get her well, make her well, will her into health. And I flew back for the next year with an intention to heal my mother from cancer. And I was in London 1 week out of every month. And I would fly back and I'd force feed her green powders and green juices and literally force feed her supplements. And, you know, after a few months, I just kind of realized she's on her own path, you know. And I was becoming so unhappy in the process because she wasn't doing what I told her. She wasn't eating what I told her. And we were becoming, you know, there was more conflict happening between us. In my effort to help her, we were becoming more distant. And so it got to the point where I just said, I surrender. Like her soul has her own journey, and I'm just going to show up and be love and be there for her. And what started out as the worst year of my life turned out to be the best year of my life, because after that, you could say I gave up any possibility of the future. I totally surrendered to she might die. She could die. Every moment became the moment, became in that acceptance and surrender. Every moment became precious. And so, you know, I got to sit with her for 8 hours at a time in chemo sessions and just be with her and connect. And I got to the point where I looked at my mother a few months into this process and I just said, it sounds strange, but I want to thank cancer. Obviously, I wish that this didn't happen, but somehow cancer and this experience got me in touch with the preciousness of life in every moment and what's really important. And I got to spend this precious time with my mother that I had not made important since I was a child. And so it was so humbling. And then I would say about 7 months into the process, and I think this is where the seeds of the book were planted. We went to the doctors, and the doctors basically said, there's nothing else we can do for you, you know. In a nice way, they say, you're going to die, so get your affairs in order. And yeah. It was a challenging moment. I'd been preparing myself, but the moment as on a human level is still, it's hard. And I looked at my mother realizing I will never see this woman again at some point. And I looked at my mother and I realized she will never meet my children. I looked at my mother and I realized all of the dreams and the plans that I still had that I wanted to do, that I'd been planning to do, like my heart was so full of this kind of regret because I thought I had time, you know? And I tell people, like, for me, I've done a lot in my life, but the only regret that I have is not spending more time with my mother. Like, what's important is the loving. And so I looked at my mother and I asked her two things. The first thing was, are you afraid? Like, they say you're going to die. Things are getting real. Are you afraid? And my mother, who's a little Japanese woman, looks me in the eyes and she said, you know, I'm not afraid because I know that I'm not this body. This body is just a temporary vehicle for my soul. That when this body dissolves, my spirit, I will be with you always from the other side. And she was like totally at peace. You know, it's one thing to say it when everything's going well, but when you're faced with the reality of this physical body expiring, it's another thing. And then I looked at my mother in the eyes and I said, you know, I wanted to be a good son because I felt like there were many things I didn't do for her that I wanted to do for her. And I said, what can I do for you? Where can I take you? What can I buy you? What do you need? And my mother looks me in the eyes and she says, there's nothing I need and there's nothing I want. All I want for my life is what God wants for my life. There's nothing else. And she looked at me with such a serenity, a neutrality. And I realized in that moment, she was free. She was this entire year, she was at peace. She didn't cry, not because she was doing a bypass. She was just calm and at peace because she wasn't attached to living. She wasn't attached to dying. She was surrendered to the highest unfolding of her life's journey, you know, and that stuck with me in such a profound way because I realized that surrender was the secret to her freedom. And I realized that my mother, who she was always just my mom, you know, was like, I'm like, damn, she's a little enlightened being, like a mini bodhisattva. And I didn't even realize. And I saw how my mother had been living this surrender her entire life. She met my father when she was 29, married this guy from Africa, couldn't speak English. You know, that's a whole other story. Couldn't speak English, agreed to get married without ever having spoken, seen him, you know, moving to a completely different continent in the mid 70s, following her soul. And so when I was thinking about the book of surrender, I reflected on that experience and I saw how my mother, her soul was teaching me. And I reflected on my entire life and I saw that so much about my life and what I'd lived was surrender and I didn't know. For instance, as a young boy, and this was maybe the first experience I had in terms of surrender, but I didn't know it was surrender. Just to give people some context, my first memories as a young boy was seeing a crippled woman crawling on the floor. She picks up the sand, the gravel that this man walks on, wipes it on her face and stands up. Miracles. Week after week, I grew up seeing blind people see and deaf people hear. The same man who says she picked up would look at a person in the wheelchair and say, why are you in this wheelchair? You're not sick. Stand up. Or a person coming with crutches and he would say, hey, throw your crutches away. He'd put his hands on them. They would be healed. Miracles, you know, but for me, I grew up in this environment. And so this man was my father. He built 300 churches in Ghana, West Africa, hundreds of thousands of followers, a huge church in London, 5,000 people. He was a very mystical man in that he went to India in the 60s, unbeknownst to anybody, and had kind of an enlightenment experience, but kept his churches. And so I grew up in this context. And so at age 8, I started speaking. Age 14, I was ordained as a minister, and I was basically given the mandate to take over my father's organization. And no one asked me about it. So my life as a kid was basically set out, and I was too afraid to speak my truth. You know, my fear was if I speak, I want to help people. So I tried to fit myself into a box of what I thought my father and everyone wanted me to be. But I had this huge internal conflict, and so I would say for 4 years, and this is where the surrender moment comes as I look back, for 4 years I went through this profound inner conflict. And when I turned 18, I felt my soul calling me in a completely different direction. I was too afraid to follow my soul because my fear was if I follow my soul and I speak my truth, then I'm going to lose my father. I'm going to be alone. I'm going to be abandoned. I'm going to be outcast. And like many of us, we hold back who we are. We hold back our truth. We hold back our authentic voice. We apologize for being who we are because we're afraid if I am who I am, then you won't love me. And so we hide and we play small and we, you know, dim our light to make the world and those around us feel comfortable so that we can be accepted. And so this is what I did. You know, this is what I did. And so when I turned 18, the calling in my soul was so strong. I felt this calling, go to America. It was big. It was like I didn't have a choice. Go to America. And it pulled me. But it was scary because I thought, oh, no, I'm going to have to leave everything behind. I'm going to have that conversation with my father. I'm going to have to disappoint literally in Africa hundreds of thousands of people that have pinned their hopes and expectations on me, this young kid, as the next guy, right? And it was terrifying. It was terrifying. And so I had to grieve the loss of who I was, grieve the loss of love, grieve the loss of my father. And when I made peace with that the best I could, I had the conversation with my father. And that was a surrender. You know, I basically said, I surrender everything. And because when I looked into my future, I saw that, yeah, I could take over my father's church. I could become successful doing what he and everybody wanted me to do. But if I didn't have myself, if I didn't have my soul, if I didn't have my truth? Like, what kind of success is that? That if I start lying to myself now, I'm going to have to lie to myself for the rest of my life. And that soul suicide, it was like self-betrayal, that was a soul suicide, felt so painful that I knew I had to do it. You know, sometimes what your soul guides you, and there might be someone listening today that feels a calling in their soul that doesn't make any sense. Maybe you feel something pulling you that is terrifying. Sometimes what your soul guides you to do will not make sense to your conscious mind. What your soul guides you to do is not going to be convenient or comfortable, because often that soul guidance arises from a deeper dimension than your conditioned mind logic. And so it doesn't fit into the current understanding of your mind. It's bigger than that, you know? But I really believe that if you, and I've seen it in my life over and over and over again, if you follow your soul, without question, without compromise, in total obedience, you will always end up in the right place at the right time with the right people. Maybe not, you may not take the route that you expected, but you may not even end up where you expected, but you will be in the right place if you follow your soul, because your soul has intelligence. And so I had the conversation with my father. We didn't speak for 2 years. And that was challenge number one. We didn't speak for 2 years for, you know, 17-year-old kid who looked up to his father as an icon. That was terrifying. You know, that was terrifying. It was scary. But long story short, sometimes people think when you follow your dream, everything is easy. When you follow your purpose and find your purpose, that's like the angels appear and the violins. Sometimes when you find your purpose or the true calling, I think that's when the real challenges start. The soul tests that you have to go through, to grow through, to develop the mental, emotional, spiritual, psychological muscle so that you can become the person that's capable of fulfilling the vision that your soul, God, the universe has given you. And so I was in this moment of deep, I don't say darkness, but unknown. I surrendered and I left my father. I left everything. The only person that supported me was my mother. And I'm a 17-year-old kid, no college degree, chose not to go to university, no money, no contacts, no prospects other than I want to go to America and go into the self-help field and I want to help people. That was it. I'm like, I want to help people with life. I barely live life and I have nothing to show for my life, but my soul was just insisting. And so I said a prayer. I said, God, I feel like I've been dropped into the middle of a dark ocean. I have no idea where I'm going, no idea what I'm doing. All I know is I'm being pulled by something bigger than myself in this way. And I'm trusting. I have totally surrendered everything. I can't go back and I don't know where I'm going forward. So I'm just free falling like universe, God, you can't leave me hanging here. And that was my prayer. And I kid you not, within 7 days, I'm in the library of my school. Someone walks up to me and says, hey, there's an article in this magazine called The Economist. You may want to read it. I never read The Economist, but I felt sensations in my body. Something said, pay attention. And I opened the back of this magazine and I see that the American government is giving away 55,000 green cards in the green card lottery.
Oh, wow.
That's when I knew that I was going to win. And just to wrap the story, I was told, so I applied right through this law firm and I was told, unless you hear back by September the 18th, then move on with your life. So every day I'm visualizing, I'm doing my affirmations, I'm seeing the President of the United States shake my hand, welcome me to the US. I cut out a piece of paper, put my name on it, colored it green, called it a green card, because I thought green cards were green, but at the time they were pink, you know. I'm like doing all my metaphysical affirmations, and every day I go to the mailbox in total expectation. Nothing, nothing, nothing. Disappointment, nothing. September the 18th rolls around. Today's the day. Nothing. Now I'm pissed off, mad at God, the universe. I'm cursing the universe out. And I said to my mom, Mom, I'm going to the US with or without a green card. I'm packing my bags and I'm going and I'm not coming back. Technically, it's illegal, but this is what my soul is. I'm going. And That night, I packed my bags. I said, tomorrow I'm going to buy a ticket. That night, September the 18th night, it was the 19th in the U.S., we get a phone call from the law firm I applied through. It says, is this Mr. Blackson? I said, yes. He said, we just got notification today that you won a green card, and we can't believe it because we've applied and we've never had anyone that's ever won a green card. And I was, you know, I remember the feeling of elation and jumping around in ecstasy and hugging my mother. And in that moment of jubilation, I heard this voice. This voice said, why are you so surprised? Did you not believe? Did you not trust? You knew you were going to win. And so that was like a first moment of surrender where I just let go and free-falled, you know, and this thing happened. And I mean, I could talk for hours and hours on, you know, different stories that have happened for me around surrender, which I'm happy to, but I'll leave it there for now.
I think that's beautiful. I do. I loved reading, listening to your book. We listened, and I love that was in your own. I love books that are read by the author because I do audiobooks. And so I loved it, but I loved the love that you had for your mother. And
I loved this woman.
About your parents. And I mean, you've had a very unique, you grew up in a very unique life and a very unique life experiences. And one of the things that I love about what I read, I started reading your other book as well, is how positive you are. And all the people that you mentioned earlier that have been through, like Nelson Mandela, and all these people that have been through deep, deep, deep struggle to get to the magnitude of who they become, it requires a little bit of a positive attitude and a positive mindset. And I think that one of the challenges with surrender though, is it can be difficult to know when to surrender and when to keep pushing forward. So how do you recommend that somebody discerns when it's time to surrender, when it's time to keep going? Like when, like in terms of like letting go of an idea, is it just about trusting that the universe has got you? Because you do have such a positive mindset. And I've noticed, I've been really observing people lately as I've been down this beautiful path that I've been on of healing and awareness and really getting out and trying to be a tangible change maker in the world and taking the stuff that I've learned and sharing with others so that they know that it's possible to change their life. I've overcome extreme adversity in my life. And I have this, like, I always laugh, I'm the perpetual Pollyanna. And so I love that positive about you.
Yes.
Some people get so stuck in their feelings and the darkness that you kind of, you were talking about, that they can't even see the light or the way out. So how do you, when life looks like that, like when you're facing real challenge, how do you encourage people to tap into whatever it is inside of them?
Yes.
To be able
so,
to.
So yes. If you're going through, if someone's listening to this right now, and you're going through the darkness, do not despair. If you're in a dark moment of life, do not despair. You are in a very profound, alchemical, transformational moment. You are like, it's as though you are in the womb right now, being recreated, maybe being broken down, maybe being cleansed, maybe being purified, where all of those parts and aspects of who you thought you were have to be released and die so that you can be reborn, because the next level of life requires that next level of you. And so if you are in the darkness where all seems lost, just know that there is a power in the darkness. The darkness is not here to curse you or deny you or even destroy you. I want you to have a relationship with the darkness. The darkness is here as a gift, because in the darkness, there is nowhere else to go. You see, when everything is light and lovely, there's so many distractions. You can look around. But when there is darkness, if you truly have an understanding of the darkness and what it is seeking to serve in you, when there is darkness and all seems lost, there is nowhere, you can't look around. There's nothing to look at, because the darkness is seeking to force you to go inside. It's forcing you inside to the only place where the real light exists. The darkness is actually seeking to reveal to you, to show you your own real light, that you are light, that you are the light, and the light is inside, not necessarily out here, but it's inside. And when you find that, you will know who you are and become a true light to the world where there is so much darkness. So first I would say, have a relationship with the darkness. The second thing I would say is stop waiting for the challenges of life to stop. Sometimes we have this idea, oh, I can't wait till I get to that moment when there's no more challenges, when life gets easier. Stop praying for life to get easier. Instead, work to develop the mental, emotional, spiritual, psychological capacity, the muscle to surf bigger waves. Because there's never a moment in the ocean when there's no waves. There's always waves. And in fact, the better surfer you become, you seek out bigger waves. And so the fact that you might be going through challenges right now, on one level, I know it's hard. On another level, I would say congratulations. Because to me, that is the sign that you are right at that precipice point. You are ready. You're so ready for the next level. Otherwise, you wouldn't be going through this challenge, which is the, I don't want to say the graduation test, but that kind of graduation test possibility, opportunity for you to graduate to that next level of your life. And many times people give up in that dark, challenging moment when they don't realize that they are on the verge of a breakthrough. Because what will often happen is right when you are about to elevate, to jump to that next level of experience, relationship, money, abundance, life, vibrational frequency, what often happens is you go through a moment of darkness or challenge. Mm-hmm. Often some of the patterns, the thought processes, the experiences, the old dynamics will sometimes sort of come into your life for you to go through, for you to face. And many times in those moments, people think, am I going backwards? What's wrong? What's happening? No, those challenges, especially in that moment, are giving the opportunity to go through them so that you can integrate and live and demonstrate your mastery over this last phase of your life, but also so that you can go through this challenge and experience in a completely different way so that you can repattern your nervous system. And so if you're in a moment of challenge, just know likely you're closer than you think. And one thing that has helped me as a whole context in, I would say, surrendering through a challenge, surrendering in a challenge, which doesn't mean giving up and being a victim and doing nothing. It means when we stop resisting. See, when we're going through challenging times, one thing that can create suffering for us, every challenge has its own pain, painful to go through some things. But where we create suffering for ourselves is our story around the challenge and our interpretation of what we make it mean. And so we go into this mindset. So if you're in a moment of challenge, observe this thought process. The experience I'm having is not the experience that I should be having. I should be having some other experience than the experience I should be having right now. I shouldn't be going through this challenge. I shouldn't be experiencing this thing, but you are, but I shouldn't be. Whenever you have that, the experience I'm having is not the experience I should be having, suffering, which will deplete your energy, mm-hmm. disempower you, and disconnect you from your own internal resource and true capacity to activate the potential inside of you to go through that challenge in a empowered way. So when you can change your relationship with the challenge, then that transforms everything. And so when you can give up the resistance and move into acceptance, and here's the key, surrender. Surrender is the open-hearted participation in the process of life that is happening. The open-hearted participation. So one level is acceptance. Okay, this is happening. I'm mad that it's happening, but it's happening. This challenge is here. I'm a little, peeved that it's happening, but it is what it is. And I'm still kind of going to go through this challenge, fighting life and a bit mad at God. That's one way. You're accepting, but you're not surrendered. Surrender is the open-hearted participation to the process and in the process that's happening. So you say, okay, this is a challenge. Let me open my heart and let me roll up my sleeves and let me participate fully. and it's raining outside, so we'll go run in the rain. We'll go invite everyone for a dinner at home, and we'll make the most of this experience. That is surrender. And so what helps and what has helped me, first, you must understand that you are a soul. First and foremost, you must understand that you are a soul. You are a spiritual being. Mm-hmm. And you are a soul. Without this understanding, going through the challenges on a one-dimensional level can be difficult. This happened, that happened, this happened, that happened, this should have happened. Success, failure, right, wrong, good, bad, God doesn't love me, I'm cursed, I'm a victim. But if you expand your perception and paradigm to, I'm a spiritual being, I'm a soul, I'm an infinite being, I'm a soul. And as a soul, we have incarnated into this human experience in order to learn, to grow, to evolve. Life is then the university for your soul's evolution. Every experience, every relationship, every divorce, pain, illness, dis-ease, bankruptcy, home, everything you go through is really the teacher and curriculum for your soul's evolution. If you really understand that, then your relationship to life, challenges, experiences, difficult times can completely transform, and you can go through it differently. So it's not just this horrible thing is happening to me. It's this teaching moment. This classroom is happening. And so when you see yourself as a soul, when you go through a difficult experience, doesn't mean it's not difficult. Doesn't mean it's not frustrating, but you can start asking a different question and going through it in a different way, which becomes, what is my soul seeking to learn in this experience? Mm-hmm. Why did my soul attract this experience? What is the evolutionary lesson? What am I needing to see about myself? What is this experience reflecting to me about my consciousness that I need to heal, shift, transform, let go, integrate? Then you can use every experience for your soul's growth and evolution. When you see it that way from a spiritual level, not just the goal line, but the soul line, then you see that every moment of life is conspiring for your evolution, for your awakening, to help you realize who you really are and grow and evolve. And then you can relate to challenges differently and go through them differently.
I love that. That's kind of, I this is my big thing. I would say that everything that happens in life is neutral. Like literally every
thing
that happens in your life is neutral. And we, as human beings and meaning-making machines, have no meaning about it. So we make up a story about what's happening. And then we can make ourselves a victim, and this is terrible, and this is awful, and the universe is, the world is happening to me, and life is happening to me instead of for me. That was when I really started to shift into wholeness and coming back to just healed and whole. That was my big awareness, is that life is not happening to me. It's happening for me.
Yes.
Everything is happening to teach me and to evolve me. And I have the ability, as this infinite soul that's squished down into this little human body having a human experience, I have the opportunity to make up any story and make up any meaning about this that I can. So if I can sit back from being in the moment, in the emotion, in the pain, and in the suffering, if I can sit back and look from the observer and not being, because when we're in these painful moments, the pain is real. It's not to invalidate the suffering. Yes. It's very, very real. But if I can look at it and I can stop the resistance, because it's the resistance that creates more and more of the pain and suffering, and I can look at it and say, what is this trying to teach me? How can I step back and allow it to be as it is and make up a new story? Make up a new meaning that serves me, that inspires me, that motivates me, and that elevates me and amplifies me.
Yes.
To this newer, higher, better version of myself. One of the things, back to what you were saying earlier, I always say darkness is our teacher. And a lot of times we talk about the butterfly going from a caterpillar to the butterfly. And for a caterpillar to become a butterfly, they literally go into a cocoon and they completely melt down into this little goo and they become completely undone. And when all feels like it's lost and all hope is gone, the next thing you know, the little imaginal cells start, and they turn them into something absolutely beautiful that they could have never imagined was coming out on the other side. And that process is so necessary to get to the other side. And And just knowing and having people like you out there and like what we're trying to do to constantly let people know that it is possible to create a new story. It is possible to really just take life. I teach Gene Keys, which is, I don't know if you're familiar with Gene Keys.
But yes, it's, I had Richard Ludd on my show. Yeah,
I love the Gene Keys. And what he teaches is allow, accept, and embrace. You know, to allow, to accept and embrace. And it's a process. It's you have to be patient, you know, to allow things to be as they are. So this is the situation that we're currently getting, you know, and this is what it is. And then just accept it, like have this acceptance of, okay. And then eventually you will be able to get to the process of embracing it. And when you embrace it, then you can take the lesson and you can use it to elevate. And it's a really beautiful process. Mm. So what I'd love to ask you, you've discussed the role of forgiveness in surrendering. And I think that that's something, I think a lot of times we hold this vision of the way life is supposed to be. And we make, and we set this, you know, we have expectations of our parents and society and what everybody else defines as success. We don't always listen to the call of our soul. And then we kind of get mad at life and people and we hold on to our grudges. And you talk about the role of forgiveness and surrendering. So how can readers learn to forgive themselves and others in order to release the pain so they can embrace the present moment?
Yeah. You know, sometimes we hold these judgments on ourselves because we judge ourselves as making mistakes and having done certain things wrong. I tell people that, look, you can't really make a mistake. Mistakes are kind of a misperception from the ego's lens. What might seem like a mistake in a particular moment or from a particular perspective, in the grand context of your own soul's evolution, is a learning experience, is a learning opportunity, is something you had to go through in order to go through so that you could evolve. Now, that doesn't mean there might not be some things to own and take responsibility for and make amends for and clean up and course correct. But we have to understand that if we're a soul, then we incarnate in order to learn to grow and evolve, that if that's the case, we're not meant to do it perfectly. That perfection doesn't exist at the level of this 3D realm. So in a sense, you're going to, I don't want to say make mistakes, but you're going to screw up. You're going to not do things. You're going to do things you maybe aren't proud of, because this is how you calibrate and learn. And hopefully, as you learn and get feedback, you can course correct so that you can use these experiences to come more deeply into alignment. And the way I see it, source energy, God, whatever we want to call it, infinite intelligence, innate intelligence, pure consciousness, God is not going to forgive you or me, because I don't believe God is really judging us. God is just the isness of the isness of the is. It's just being, is neutral, you know? And so if God isn't going to forgive us because God is not judging us, why are we judging ourselves and holding these judgments on ourselves and then unconsciously punishing ourselves for days, weeks, months, and years of making ourselves miserable and sick for no reason? And so I think when we can see ourselves as souls, then we can start seeing every interaction from a different viewpoint. We can see everything we've been through and everything someone has done to us and everything someone says to us and our parents from a different viewpoint, that on some level, my soul chose my parents. And on some level, you know, my soul has incarnated to experience certain lessons in this school of life. And everyone was my teacher. So from that soul level, doesn't mean certain things are condonable, but we had to go through it so we could learn, so we could evolve. And so when we start seeing things from that soul level, I think it shifts how we experience people, how we experience forgiveness. You know, look, on that, let's take it to the grand spiritual level for a moment. On that grand spiritual level, consciousness is manifesting itself as me, as you, as a multiplicity of form. And on that grand, bigger spiritual level, there's only one of us here.
Right.
And so life is really like a one man, one woman play. And if that's the case, but now as we're in our egos, there's this apparent separation. So I think I am me and you are you, and my mom is my mom and my dad is my dad and my enemy is my enemy. But really, is one consciousness manifesting itself as a multiplicity of forms seeking to experience itself in all different sizes, shapes, and experiences and flavors of life. And so I think that when we understand that, then at the deepest level, now I'm talking the deepest level, not this just human level. At the deepest level, there's no one really to forgive because there's only one of us here playing itself as many. And so often when when we wake up to who we really are, and I realize that what I am is what you are, and we are all really one consciousness, then it shifts our understanding, experience of forgiveness and life. Or when we die and this veil fades and we look and we see, you're like, wow, I am me and I am you. There's only one of us here. Then I think it transforms our relationship to forgiveness completely. And so I will definitely say that on a human level, when certain things have happened, it's painful. When certain things have gone down, it's painful. Certain things parents did and we went through, it is painful. Not to minimize, not to take any of that away. It's painful, and there's many things on a human level that happened that weren't okay, that I wouldn't wish on anyone, that maybe certain people need to be held accountable and responsible, and there need to be certain restructuring of relationships and maybe even certain consequences. That's not to deny this 3D level. But I will also say that nothing and no one is worth our freedom. And to me, the real forgiveness is not just towards another person. The real forgiveness is to our... Because many times we wait for somebody that has hurt us, wronged us, to apologize. We wait for them to own it, to make amends, to apologize in order for us to forgive. So we don't realize that in doing that, we are giving our power away to that person. We're giving our freedom away to the other person. Nobody is worth our freedom. And so when you start seeing, well, I'm waiting for someone to be a certain way for me to forgive them, we're not free. And so I always say that forgiveness is the most powerful thing that we can give, and we can give ourselves, that we can give another, that we can do. Because in that act of forgiveness, we set ourselves free and we begin to acknowledge the deeper innocence of the other person's soul. The real forgiveness doesn't depend on another person. The real forgiveness is a choice, and the real forgiveness is in our relationship to that person within ourselves. Yes. And so you don't need another person, dead or alive, to forgive. You can forgive your perception of them. You can forgive the act. Much of the time, who we really need to forgive is ourselves. Mm-hmm. And who we were and the choices we made in relationship with the other person, in relation to the other person, because there's certain maybe judgments and anger and frustration that we're holding on ourselves for the way that we showed up or the way that we didn't show up. One thing that's really helped me is realizing this. This was a deep level of forgiveness I came to. Everybody's innocent. Now that might sound crazy to some people. What do you mean? That killer's innocent. That person that killed George Floyd is innocent. Everybody's innocent. My father's innocent. My father was never there for me, didn't show up for me. I had so much anger, so much anger towards my father for many, many years of my life. When I turned 21, I finally had to realize it wasn't serving anything. It wasn't changing him. It wasn't helping me. If anything, it was making me more miserable, bitter, and angry at life. And there's one moment in my life where I heard like a voice say, nobody owes you anything anymore. Mm-hmm. God doesn't owe you anything. Your father doesn't owe you anything. And so when I realized that, I had to take complete responsibility for what I was carrying if I wanted to be free. And so I had to make a choice. do I want to be free? And if that's the case, we have the power to do that. So when I said everybody is innocent, here's what I mean. And this shifted my, I don't know, my experience around forgiveness. I started reflecting on people that hurt me. I started reflecting on people that maybe when I was younger took advantage of me, disrespected me, betrayed me, were abusive in certain ways as friends. And I started thinking, if I believed what they believe, I would do and have done exactly what they did. Mm-hmm. But you might say, but you didn't believe, I didn't believe what they believe, which is why I didn't do what they did. But if I believed what George Floyd's killer, but this is going to sound controversial, but if I believe what George Floyd's killer believed, I would do what he did. But I don't believe what he did. So I didn't do what he did. The whole point is I don't believe what he did. But if I believed in my mind, in my structure, about a certain group of people, about a certain way of life is, my actions would follow my beliefs. And so when we are stuck in an identity, or when somebody, our parents, as an example, when they're stuck in an identity and have certain beliefs about life and certain beliefs about the world and certain beliefs about men, certain beliefs about children, certain beliefs about God and the universe and existence and other people and black people and white people and, you know, Christian people and, you know, Buddhist people, that is going to control how we show up. And from that prison of ego and identity, we won't be able to help but act a certain way. From that place, you realize, wow, they couldn't help it. My father, based on his belief system, was not able, did not have the capacity to show up another way because he believed life was this way. And that's what was real for him. Doesn't make it right, doesn't make it okay. But if he couldn't help himself, what I had to see was if my father could not help himself because he didn't have a father and his father didn't have a father and life was a certain way for them, born on a concrete floor in the middle of a jungle in nowhere in Ghana, he couldn't help it. He did what he knew how to do and he couldn't have been any other way. When I realized that, let's say about my father, that he couldn't actually help himself, that's not to condone. Forgiveness was a natural response. And I saw that really he was innocent. In a sense, he was a, I don't say a victim of his own beliefs, you know, but he couldn't help himself and act that way. And when I saw that, I just saw he was innocent. He couldn't help it. And that enabled me, or that freed me up to just have compassion in this example for my father and have love for my father. And then that didn't mean I didn't have to feel certain layers of pain and hurt and emotion and anger and process through that on a human level, but it totally shifted how I held him. That opened up the space for forgiveness, because a monkey can't drive a car. A two-year-old is not going to fly an airplane. They can't help it. It doesn't matter how upset I get, they can't help it. And so I saw that my father couldn't have been any other way. And that shifted me, and I was able to see him as innocent at the purest level. And that opened up a whole new dimension of forgiveness for me. And I hope that maybe that gives someone listening something to think about, you know?
That's beautiful. You know, I've heard the saying that forgiveness is opening up the cage and realizing that you were the one that was imprisoned.
Yes.
It's not, you're not letting someone else out. You're letting yourself out of that experience internally. And when I was young, when I was about maybe 9 or 10, I remember specifically going to bed at night and my mother was reading, we were doing the Lord's Prayer and she was teaching me that. And we talked about forgiveness. And she said, forgiveness, with forgiveness comes change of behavior and change in action. And without that, then that sorry that you say doesn't hold any weight and it doesn't have any meaning. And so true forgiveness comes with a change within ourselves that is embodied in our experience and our actions. And so I think that's one way you can measure whether you really are forgiving is, am I changing? Am I shifting into a new way of being? Am I truly choosing to be different and letting go of that old behavior? And acknowledging that, like you said, that people are raised a certain way and that's what they were raised in. So often people that abuse were abused.
Yes.
Because that was what they were shown in life and they were programmed to behave a certain way. And until we bring conscious awareness to our choices, we are stuck in that programming.
Yeah.
And so this is why I say this on almost every podcast because it always comes up, but choose consciously. Whatever you choose consciously and know what you're choosing, because then the results of your choice will become clear to you, your relationship to that choice. And then you can decide whether you want to change and become different.
Yeah.
And that's powerful. It's one of those. It's your book is so timely for me right now because surrender is something that I'm working on right now with certain things. And one of the things that I, just on a personal note, I tend to handle really big things very well because I can surrender to those in an easier way. Like it's easier for me to acknowledge that that's outside of my control, but my mouse not working correctly, the software that I'm developing in not working just the way it did 10 minutes ago, suddenly there's a bug. That kind of stuff drives me off a cliff. Like it's the universe keeps poking me and saying, hey, you still got some control issues there, Will. You need to work on this. And so we've been talking about this a lot, and it's so beautiful how you magically appeared in this scenario with us because it's very timely with what we're talking about right now. So I really thank you for being on with us today.
Yeah, this has been really, I really enjoyed it. Back to the topic of forgiveness. I learned forgiveness because of my brother. And my brother stabbed both of my parents and then he ended up taking his own life. And there was imagine all of it played out in the news and the public. And it was a huge catalyst. It was the catalyst for me becoming the person I am today. And this moment in my life, I'm so grateful for all of it. But for the longest time, I was angry. And when it happened, I didn't speak to him again. And he was in a mental institution for 6 months before he took his own life. And he called me the night before he hung himself and begged me to forgive him. And I couldn't do it. And I didn't speak to him and I didn't go back. And then it was too late. And I got really sick and got like an autoimmune disease and almost died. And I went through this whole process. And what I realized when I discovered Gene Keys, that was the thing, my life's work is compassion. And I realized that my brother came here to teach me compassion.
Yes.
And I had an interaction with Richard Rudd. We were on a clubhouse talk and he was talking about there was a shooting in his town and the guy had killed six people and then killed himself. And they were asking for compassion for the family and prayers for the family for that. And I said, but has anybody thought about compassion for the shooter?
Yeah.
Because I never thought about things like that until I had my brother and had to look at my brother. And I know what he went through and I know what he suffered through. And he suffered through things that no child should ever go through at the hands of a very prominent politician that everybody knew. And it was all, it was a big deal. And he suffered so deeply and he acted out of his pain. And at the end, he was innocent. And I realize that now. I believe in soul contracts. So I believe he took on a very difficult soul contract so that I could learn forgiveness, so that I could have a platform to share people like you with the world and this message of it is possible to overcome even the deepest, darkest moments and people, and even these people that you people look at my brother and the things he did and they want to really judge him, but they have no idea the pain and suffering, and that doesn't excuse the behavior, but it often leads to the outcome that happened for him. And I'm determined to make a difference in other people's lives, to show compassion for the people that need. I think when we're the most broken is when we need love the most, when we need to extend love the most to other people. And I always say, I had this in the middle of an iboga journey. I had this really profound moment where I'm sitting in the darkness and with the medicine and I'm surrounded by the rubble of my life. And the medicine said, so you want to be a healer and you want to change the world and you want to impact the world. And I'm looking out and out, there's a little window and I'm sitting in this little pile of rubble. And this is all like in plant medicines, but I'm looking out this window and I see all the beauty of the world. And the medicine said, the darkness, that healing doesn't happen out there. It happens here when you can learn to sit with someone at their absolute most broken in the darkness of their life and love them there. And if they never change and they're never any other way, you love them there. And that value, that little bit of self-worth, that little tiny light in the darkness could be the spark that ignites them to step into really changing, that change is possible and it is possible. And even if they don't change, their life still has value. And just the simple fact that we exist as human beings on the planet makes us valuable intrinsically and have worth that we don't need to earn. You know, we're taught so much that we have to earn favor outside of ourselves and that we're not successful until we reach a certain level of income and have a certain house and a car and we live up to our parents' expectations and society's expectations. And we sit walking around not enough. And if people could just let that go, you know, and learn, like I'm grateful for my brother who taught me forgiveness. You know, I'm grateful. I love the story about your mom and how she was so resigned and surrendered to death. Like I faced death and I almost died before I, you know, came back. Like I literally was told I wouldn't live until I was 50 and I am now 53. So I'm grateful for every moment that I'm alive. But it was letting go of that fear of death. And now purposelessness is my, in Jinkies, is my hurl. And it's about, I now don't fear living. I fear not having made a difference, not making it, but not fully living, like not going out and just sucking all of the nectar out of every opportunity of life that I have and taking every moment and learning the lesson. And I think that it's possible for so many people. And I think your book is super, super timely for us. We've had some really great conversations. Yeah. We had such a great drive. Yeah. It's a long drive from Florida back to Minnesota. Yeah. And we literally got back the day before it dumped a foot of snow on us and coming from the bright sunshiny Florida. So we were surrendered to that. But we had, it made for an incredible trip, like just coming back and listening to your book and really, and talking about it. And we've been having so many great conversations and stuff. And we've hit about an hour. And so I want to be respectful of your time. Yes. And so I just want to ask you like a final question. So what do you hope that listeners take away from, or readers of your book take away from The Magic of Surrender? And how do you see surrender as a key to creating a more peaceful and fulfilling world? I mean, our point with our podcast is finding people that are out creating tangible change. And we definitely think that you're doing that. So I'd love to just, what do you hope people take away from it? And how do you see this as a key for creating a more peaceful
world? Look, it's simple. I hope people are inspired to live surrender more and more, because I think the possibilities are truly limitless when you do. A life that is created from the ego will always be a limited life, but a life that is created from the soul will be unlimited in ways that you cannot even imagine. You know, the ego-based model is all about, well, what do I want? And, you know, get clear on what I want, this I think, and you might get what you thought you wanted only to realize that what you thought you wanted was just what you thought you wanted based on, you know, who you thought you were, and many of your goals are projections of unmet needs from childhood. But if you truly live surrender, you start playing an infinite game, and that infinite game is a game of like, what is it? It's a different question. What is it that life is seeking to express through me? What is it that the divine is seeking to express through me? What is the universe? What is God? What is my soul seeking to express and to align with that deeper impulse of life and live that? Then you can align your mind, your body, your marketing, your planning, your strength with what is true. But that's when life starts manifesting through you. And that's when I think the real miracles and magic happens. And so I just want people to get that. Yeah, if you want to manifest that next level, Surrender is the key. And for those that might be like, well, really, are you sure? Okay, let me give a scenario that I sometimes give. And I think your audience might appreciate this, but you know, some people think, surrender is just for the yogis, it's just for the spiritual people. Okay, if everyone listening, you've all had the experience of the profundity of surrender. If you think about your greatest sexual experience, right now, if everybody, you think about your most profound lovemaking experience with your lover, where you and your lover were together, kissing, loving, making love in the throes of ecstasy, merging into oneness, blissful, ecstatic bliss together, union, divine union, energy flowing, blissful beyond your imagination. Let me ask everybody, and you don't have to be even spiritual. Everyone has, almost everyone, you've made love in some way. You've had a sexual ecstatic experience, even one moment. What made it blissful? Was it the fact that you came to the sexual lovemaking encounter with a big 700-page notebook and a 14-page plan of, okay, honey, minute one, okay, you're going to lie down this way. Minute two, you're going to kiss me this way. Minute three, honey, don't, quiet down. Exact minute three, you got to. That's not how it was, right? The reason lovemaking was so blissful was because you surrendered. You didn't know what was going to happen. You didn't know what your lover was going to do. You didn't know what was going to happen the next minute. You didn't have a plan for the next hour or 30 minutes or 3 hours of the experience. It was just unfolding and happening through you, in you, and as you, and you became one. That is the real, raw proof of the magic of surrender. You've had the experience. So why not live that way? And if you live that way, I promise you this, magic and miracles. And that's really what I want people to get. Like, we trust Siri on our phone more than we trust our soul. Siri says, turn left. Okay, we don't even question. Siri says that we don't question. But the moment your soul says, write that book, launch that course, do that project, go to Bali, go to Egypt. We question. No, really? Me? Sure? Are you sure? Like, really? Yeah. And so all I'll say is, don't question.
Yeah.
One of the things that blocks our alignment is we receive the guidance and then the mind kicks in and we question how and when. And, you know, we start overanalyzing everything. The overanalysis is the ego strategy of trying to control, because we mistakenly believe if I can be in control, I'm going to be safe and I won't get hurt again like I was hurt when I was young. And so now we block the flow because we try to understand everything. So I just want people to get, look, if you feel something, this impulse arises from a deeper place than your conditioned mind. The soul's guidance won't necessarily fit into your mind's logic because it's arising from a dimension of existence that's bigger than that. Don't question. When you feel that guidance, just act. Just go. Just act. Often, way afterwards, when you look back, months, days, weeks, years later, that's when it will make sense. And then you will understand, oh, I understand why I'm supposed to go to Bali. Oh, I understand why I was supposed to go to that coffee shop. Oh, I understand why I was supposed to do that thing. Oh, I understand why that thing was not supposed to work out. And so trust life, trust existence, trust what you are.
Yeah, I love that.
So how can people get in touch with you? How can they get a hold of your book? Where's it sold? How can they get in touch with you if they need to get in touch with you?
Thank you.
I know you do this trip to Bali in the summertime, and that sounds like a really amazing
trip. Yeah.
That's one of our goal places. Yeah. Bali and Egypt.
Do it. Come along. So the first thing is that, yes, twice a year I do an event to Bali. This is my last year doing this particular event. I've done it for 10 years. I've done 20 of these events. We've had some of the most unique visionaries and humans from around the world that, you know, if you're someone and you feel a calling to make a difference on the planet and you're ready to unravel the layers of your conditioning and connect to your soul and share your gifts with the world on a bigger level, I created this unique 12-day experiential seminar training process that's really designed to help people just get free. It's called Boundless Bliss. the Bali Breakthrough Experience. This will be my 21st. The next event is July the 28th through August the 8th. People can go to www.boundlessblissbali.com and apply there, find out all the info there. You'll know if it's right for you. The second thing is the book, The Magic of Surrender, is available on paperback. Get the paperback version because there's some updates in it, and it's on sale on Amazon. Check it out there. I wanted to write a book that was very easy easy to read and easy to listen to. I wanted to write it so that even a 12-year-old could read it and distill these concepts. So people can get it on Amazon. My main website, KUTE, KUTE, KUTEBlackson.com. You can find out more info about me there. Instagram, Kute Blackson. Facebook, Kute Love Now. My podcast, Soul Talk.
Yeah, we will share all the links to all of that in the show notes so people can find you. And it has been such a pleasure to have you on. And just the book was so timely for us. And
sounds
just
great.
Everything that you're doing, the world needs a whole lot more of you.
Yes.
So I hope lots of people sign up for your stuff so that we can start. That's our goal, is to just see people really stepping into their power and knowing that it's possible.
That's awesome.
So I love that. I love what you're doing. And everything that you stand for.
Thank you so much. Yep, thank you.
Yeah, and if we can be in service to you in any way, just let us know.
Yep,
thank you.
So, thank you so much.
Take care.
Take care.
That's a wrap. Thanks for tuning in to Tangible Changemakers Podcast. We are honored that you honored us with your time and attention. We trust you found the conversation thought-provoking, and we hope you are inspired to take tangible action in your own life. We'd love your first action to share this episode or write us a review. Be sure to subscribe and click the links in the show notes for everything mentioned in this episode. Join us over at Meraki Tribe Collective to keep the conversations going and flowing. We will leave you with wise words to live by. Be the world you wish to create.